It's because I love you too much. Maybe that is why you love me so little. Maybe when I answered yes, maybe I became a bore. Maybe if I loved you less, maybe you would love me more. Maybe it's because I've kissed you too much. Maybe that is why my kiss means so little. Maybe with a love so great and a love so small, then maybe I'll be left with no love at all. Maybe with a love so great and a love so small, then maybe I'll be left with no love at all.
All right, good evening. We're at the February 24th, 2016 meeting of the City of Goleta Parks and Recreation Commission. And if we could have their roll call, please. Oh, I guess that Sorry. Was, oh, I always get the order wrong on this. Okay, so I guess we start with the Pledge of Allegiance. That's what we do, okay.
Short time.
All right, Pledge of Allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, now we can have the roll call.
Thank you. Commissioner Barsky.
Here.
Commissioner Jones. Here. Commissioner West.
Here.
Vice Chair Hart.
Here.
Chair Richards.
Here.
Thank you.
Thank you. And do we have any speaker slips? No public speaker slips?
I have not received any.
Okay, great. And if we could just go right into item A then, we have a presentation.
Thank you, Chair Richards and members of the Parks and Recreation Commission. And we're pleased that this is the first meeting of 2015 up there? It says 2015, it's 2016. We wanted to bring a number of items to you tonight that you've expressed previous interest in, including a very special program of the city called the Monarch Butterfly Program. And some of you have had the opportunity to go out on the bluffs out in the Elwood Butterfly Zone area and really see some of the great things that are out there. And we're pleased tonight to have Ms. Liliana Encinas here to conduct a update and a season recap for you, to share with you some of the things that went on this past season. And we're really excited to have her here. She oversees the volunteer work effort, the docents that are out there. She's also been out conducting tours and providing assistance. So you'll get the full rundown now, and I would like to turn it over to Ms. Liliana Encinas.
Thank you, Vito.
If you can turn on your mic. There you go. Yeah. Yep.
Thank you, Vito. Good evening, Commissioner Chair and members of the Park and Rec Commission. Thank you for having me. And so in front of you, you have a packet that has a copy of the slides that we'll be reviewing. And so you can follow with that. And there's also a handout that gives you some statistics for the season's recap. So you can also follow along there. And so I'll get started. And so we'll go into what the program overview is. So this is our docent program is one of four programs in the state of California. And it was developed by city staff in 2007, and it was to serve our community. It is assisted by the docent program coordinator, which this season was myself, and with a lot of help from Jaime Valdez, which is our economic development coordinator. And our goal is to develop a pool of trained volunteers to provide the public with an on-site educational opportunity and to make a good experience when they visit the Grove. And there's more information at our Goleta Butterfly Grove website, and you can always visit there for more information. Elwood Mesa has six aggregation sites. And so Goleta Butterfly Grove, which we also call Elwood Main, is usually the largest. It is actually the largest in the state of California as well. And this season, we had a total monarch count of 20,409 butterflies. And it is an environmentally sensitive habit area, so we keep the grove in its natural state as best as we can. And so right now we're looking at a graph of the highest monarch count, which took place in December. And so we do have, we do contract some folks that go and do the monarch counts, and they do the counts actually for the whole state of California. And so they provide us with counts every 2 weeks. And the highest count was in the month of December, where most of the sites peaked early December, by December 3rd. And then Elwood, Maine was the latest, which was in December 31st with its highest count of 7,617. And so I'm going to move on to, so the butterfly growth fluctuates greatly throughout the years. And as you can see, there's data here that goes back to the late 80s, early 90s, and how the counts are different. We hit the lowest count 2 years ago, which was 2,400 butterflies in the whole Elwood Mesa area, which was very, very low. But we were fortunate this year that we got to the two digits again and higher, and so we were at 20,409 butterflies. Currently, we have 13 volunteers. We have two new this year. Of this cadre of volunteers, we have volunteers that are specific for field trips and tours, and some other volunteers are during the weekends, and so they all bring different skill sets to the group. And the cadre of volunteers consists of educators, master gardeners, monarch enthusiasts, and just the residents at large. And so we train these volunteers, and I say we, myself, with an educator, Lynn Kirby, that's been involved in the program for several years now. And then we do have those docents on the weekends as well. We provide school field trips, and we highly encourage our local schools to participate and come and visit the Grove. And this year, we were able to coordinate 15 docent trips. We pre-schedule these trips and try to accommodate as best as we can the schools, and we understand that it's hard to get everybody's schedule to work, but we try our best, and we do groups from 15 to 50 students. And we had over 600 students visit the Grove this season. We provide docent-led tours during the weekdays. And so, again, the schools, and then we do private travel companies as well. We were able to do 15 trips this season, but we did have to cancel about 11 trips because of the weather conditions, so it played a big role in our season's scheduling for this season. We do have educational opportunities. So we have the Xerces Society Counting Workshop and the Thanksgiving Count that takes place every year. We have butterfly gardening presentations, and sometimes we get to go to the schools and do the science nights as well. The funding for the Butterfly Docent Program is through the Butterfly Fund, and it was created as part of Elwood Mesa Open Space land swap with the Comstock Homes. The program is implemented by the Neighborhood Services and Public Safety Department, and we accept donations to the city, and we deposit it into the Butterfly Fund as well. And the primary expenses for this program are the materials. We provide the docents with some swag. They have a vest and training materials to take to the Grove with them. And so the costs are very minimal. We do acknowledge their participation and their volunteer work. So we do offer a lunch for all the docents when the season is over, and we give them a gift as well. So that's what most of the expenses are for. We do have lots of plans for next season, and so we want to keep that relationship growing with the other docent programs throughout the state. We want to continue recruiting enthusiastic docents. Personally, I would like to have more docents that are fluent in other languages, because we do get a lot of visitors from out of the areas and with multiple languages and cultures, and we want to kind of have a more diverse cadre of volunteers that could provide these presentations in different languages as well. And we want to continue to enhance the visitors' experience by having these enthusiastic and knowledgeable docents from other cultures as well. We want to upgrade the educational display materials at the Grove. So we're looking into maybe some signs and the training materials, and all the materials that we have them available in English and Spanish language as well. And so if you would like any more information on the Butterfly Docent Program, you can always contact me or Jaime Valdez, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your report. I think we have some questions.
I have two questions. Number one, what is the Thanksgiving count? I'm not familiar with that. Is that similar to like an Audubon Society Christmas bird count, but it's on Thanksgiving and it's butterflies?
So I'm going to defer that question to Jaime.
He's... Oh, okay.
Testing, testing. Good evening, Chair and members of the Commission. The Thanksgiving count is something that's done annually. It's kind of a community service event that's loosely, I would say, informal, but it's an excuse for folks to go out during Thanksgiving time. A lot of people come back to the area from abroad, you know, students, folks that are visiting family. It's something that, you know, folks look forward to do on the weekends. It's obviously not mandatory in any sense of the way, but it gives people an opportunity to go out to the Grove as a kind of a kickoff to the season as it starts to speed up and grow more legs. As Ms. Encina said earlier, because the counts tend to peak in December and January, usually there's a fair amount already starting to aggregate in the area, so that's kind of a kickoff is why they call it that.
Well, I was wondering if next year, if you could let the Parks and Rec commissioners know about it. I would have loved to have come. I didn't know anything about it. I think it sounds very exciting.
That's something we can absolutely do. I think a lot of times this ends up being just the docents and some of their friends and families that go out. But it's in no way limited to them. So it's like all of our programs and projects at the city, they're open to the public, and that's what they're there for. So we can absolutely do that next year.
Yes. And then my last question was, since Monterey's only 4 hours away, do you all ever do any type of collaborative training and brainstorming with, you know, the other, you know, fairly close monarch butterfly preserves?
My understanding is that it's usually an exchange of information. I'm not aware of any actual formal training go up there or have them
Thank
come
you.
Down here. Obviously, they're welcome to come down and visit. I'm sure staff would be happy to host them and go out to the Grove with them. But usually it's more of an information exchange. and that's how it's been in the past.
Thank you. Commissioner Hart?
Thank you. This dovetails kind of nicely into Commissioner West's comment. Is there any correlation? I see the big jumps in the numbers over the years, 2011 peaking and then the big dive. Is there correlation to the other sites around California to see if it's just movement within the area?
According to our biologists, it's a Mead Environmental Group, group of consultants out of San Luis Obispo, they tend to see some correlation. Again, they're very soft words that they use because each ecosystem is slightly different. So they're very cautious in terms of saying trends or correlations. But from what we understand in the past, typically when we experience higher numbers, that tends to be the case with other overwintering sites as well, but not necessarily always the case.
And if I can just finish with one more question. I saw the goals, and you mentioned the funding. Is your current funding adequate to pursue your goals?
That's a good question. So the way the fund was established, it was part of a developer concession for mitigation for the area. In the past, it still has money in it, and those Comstock homes, I think, were built in 2007 or 2008. Largely, as Ms. Encinas pointed out, the expenses year to year aren't very large. I'm not trying to be coy about how much it is, but I mean, we're talking probably in the range of less than $1,000 a year in terms of all the expenses that are incurred, not including staff time. So we do have our public works folks that do go out there and provide a great service. So that's not really counted in the cost, but in terms of what expenses actually hit that fund, it's pretty minimal. The other things that we've been very fortunate with is some of the travel groups that come up have a great experience, and because it's free, they often will, cut a check of a couple $100 here or there. So that helps offset some of the costs. But for example, once you make signs, if they're pretty durable, they last several years. Same thing with if you have the same docents, they're not going to get a new set of, vests and all those other items every year. They may need one every 3 or 4 years. So that's why we say that the funds are pretty limited in terms of what we spend. I guess the other flip side, which is additional information, because it is an environmentally sensitive habitat area, the amount of work we actually do in the grove is very, very limited. We try to leave it as natural as possible. So ideas of putting in, bigger, grander things, which would typically cost more money, the city tends to shy away from unless it's absolutely necessary. Because again, the idea is to maintain the sensitive habitat area as it is. It's a natural place. We don't want to interrupt it too much.
Thank you. I had a question regarding the docent trips. I noticed that it looked like it dropped this year down to 15, and I was just wondering if you had a sense of what was driving that, why there were fewer.
So actually, the number of docent trips we had scheduled was in the area was about 29 or 30 this year, but we had to cancel a number of them. One, we had some pretty significant rain events that just made it unsafe to have, small children walking around in the mud in the grove. What tends to happen, too, is because we have to schedule these events out, several weeks in advance, the schools have to also do the same with their folks as well, including, parents and teachers getting consent forms, coordinating transportation. So while they may have had a schedule for Monday, it rained, but they could go Wednesday, they may not be able to go for two more weeks unless they get the bus to be able to be available. Mm-hmm. The other part that we had was with the rainstorms, there were a couple of days that we did cancel because some of the trees that fell could have posed a hazard. So we were erring on the side of caution. And so that caused us to have to cancel some of those trips. Other things come up too. The teachers say, oh, for whatever reasons, we can't do it this week, and then they have to start the process again. So it's not as easy as just, booking a hotel reservation and you just pay for it up front. But and it's there when you get there. If the weather changes, then, we have to adjust. But we I think 3 or 4 of the classes we were able to reschedule that same week or the following week, which they really appreciated. So we try to do the best we can, but I think last year, because it was drier, we didn't have any cancellations that I can recall.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed that of the 15, 14 were school groups, and it looks like there was one travel company. Is that typical, or do we usually have more outside? Is it mostly schools, I guess?
So the field trips, we really try to limit it to the schools because they're our first priority when it comes to scheduling. We do sometimes will accommodate tour groups from out of the area. But for a lot of residents or folks that are in the area, they kind of come and go as they please. I mean, they know where it's at. They go with their families, go with the, you know, their jogger or stroller, and go take a tour themselves. So in terms of actual separate field trips that people coordinate, it's more like office hours. They'll come on the weekends when there's docents there that can answer questions, but not necessarily a full-blown presentation with materials.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Yes.
I have a question. Do you know if there's any plan, perhaps not through this program, and maybe this is a question for Vito, for future goal of universal access to the Grove area?
I believe your question is related to ADA, to be able to get folks in wheelchairs up there. My understanding is that's kind of a sensitive issue because as you start to make changes, install, you know, different types of material, it does start to disturb the natural environment. So that question's a little sensitive. I'm not sure how to best answer it. I know it's definitely something that's been brought up in the past.
And in answer to Commissioner Jones' question, we could work with our Public Works Director, Ms. Gaglione, for a more in-depth response. Because the Department of Public Works deals with some of the aspects of maintenance and repairs out in that area. So we'd be happy to get back to you on that for a more specific answer. But Mr. Valdez did touch on some of the issues to consider it for a natural environment. Yes. Mr. Chair and members of the Commission, that concludes our report for you, an update on this really important and special program of the city. And I know it's important also to recognize the work efforts of the dedicated docents and volunteers, along certainly with Ms. Encina's work, to make this program really special for the kids and all the people who get a chance to go out there and visit this very special area of the city. And we're just pleased to be able to give you an update on it and to share some of the information with members of the public also who are at home.
Mr. Valdez, Ms. Encinas, thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right, moving along. Item A2, Bicycle Pedestrian Master Plan.
Members of the Commission and Mr. Chair, we have with us tonight Mr. James Winslow from the Department of Public Works, who is a senior project manager. As the commission is well aware, my department, the Neighborhood Services and Public Safety Department, works very closely with the Department of Public Works for a number of things that this commission has an interest in. You'll also recall last year during the recreation needs assessment document, there was a lot of connection with the Department of Public Works. Tonight is yet another opportunity to share with the commission one of the important works that's going on that you've had an interest in that Mr. James Winslow will be presenting to you today is the Bicycle and Pedestrian Master Plan. And so with that, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Winslow.
Thank you, Director Adamaitis, Commissioner Richards, or Chair Richards, and members of the Commission, members of the public, thank you for having us. My name is James Winslow. I'm a senior project manager with the Public Works Department Capital Improvement Program, and it's a pleasure to be here today, or tonight, this evening, to bring you up to speed on what's going on in relation to the Bike Ped Master Plan. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. The purpose and the goal of the Bicycle Pedestrian Master Plan is basically a comprehensive plan. We had to identify gaps and barriers in the network. We have a plan from the county, as you may recall, that we adopted when we incorporated as a city in 2005. It was an interim bike plan. And we did a brief amendment to the plan in December of 2009. So the purpose of this effort is to identify any future existing gaps in the network. developed the methodology going forward for identifying projects and making improvements to our bicycle and pedestrian network and improving safety in the neighborhood and in the city. We also are looking at incorporating new design standards. Again, we incorporated from the county, assumed a lot of the design standards. We'd like to come up with some of our own versions of those and solidify those in our own design standards. And of course, as always, anytime you're talking about bike and ped activities, whether that's a project that we're putting into place through construction or a master plan such as this, is opportunities to talk to the public. And that is ways to encourage walking and biking, which are healthy activities and benefit the community through those discussions. We're all familiar with the city of Goleta, but the bike plan is for the entire citywide. It's not just for certain areas. You know, again, we incorporated, we have an interim plan when we did amend it in 2009. But I want to reiterate, that was something that the county had basically a holdover from the county. We applied for a grant through the Sustainable Communities program. We landed a $203,000 grant. Our local match, including in-kind, is about $24,000. And so we went out for requests for proposals. There we go. Sorry, I don't know what happened. We put a request for proposal. Excuse me, we're having some technical difficulties. Request for proposals for firms that specialize in bicycle and pedestrian master plans to propose on. We received, I think, 6 proposals, and we interviewed 4. And currently we're in the final stages of negotiation with that top firm. And once we come to a consensus on the scope of work, the level of effort within the budget, and then we will take something to council for their authorization to award a contract for that project, and then we'll begin. Some of the significant efforts that will be needed for this is community outreach. This is going to be a big component. There's going to be at least 3 focus events at the, you know, that would include focus group meetings, gathering the input from the public. That's really key to having a successful plan. And then we'd have another meeting where we present the summary of those options. So we, once the input from the public is been gathered, we would go and final the analysis of everything in the city, or the firm would, and then come back to the public with a presentation of different options for another way in and how to proceed. And then, of course, we'd present the final review to the public. So it's kind of 3 significant community outreach events that are there. And part of that throughout the entire process is a survey. And one of the options we're talking about is an online dynamic survey where you know, residents and interested parties can go in online to the website that they're going to set up, fill out the survey, and then to help us to really gather information from people that we wouldn't connect with at the outreach events or may not be able to attend a public meeting. They can still do it from online in a convenient location that they can access the network. Or internet. Some of those outreach events, a lot of them are going to be hands-on. Options would be that we're looking at doing like city walk audits, so actually walking around with the consultant through some of the areas that have potential issues to really get a better feel and sense of what could be done or what the issues are and problems and have a better solution. Rolling and walking focus group meetings that may include cycling, you know, taking groups and cycling through the areas and seeing how they feel and improvements can be made. And then, of course, workshops and community events. And those can extend to farmers markets, you know, going to places where there's already existing groups of the community gathering, setting a pop-up tent up and getting that information. They're already there. It's a booth that you just set up, and we can get really good impact and feedback from them. And the firms, pretty much all the firms have been successful with those types of events, so those are not unheard of. Here's an example or an image of the firm that we're looking at going with. One of their community outreach events, they've taken a huge map of a section of the area from a different city, of course not us, and just tagging everything. You know, anybody, it's a brainstorming event, you know, and just really putting notes on where they would like to see improvements, where they see problems, you know, whatever the community input is. So it's a great opportunity to weigh in. Here's two more. Here's one along a river where they actually use pins and strings to identify different alignments of potential pedestrian or bike paths. Following the community outreach event, as I mentioned, they would move into then, you know, at least the initial community outreach event. Let me back up. Community outreach would go through the whole thing. That wouldn't just be a one at the beginning and we'd be done. The initial outreach would be for gathering the input, but then, again, we would go into the analysis and assessment, not just of the input from the community, but also what does our design standards currently say, what is our inventory, what projects do we have in the books for bicycle and pedestrian improvements, what are the demographic trends, those types of things, analyzing, taking in the website data that comes in and going and using that in terms of the moving forward. Some of the information they would be using, of course, this is the bike network that we have in our general plan. Here's another example of something that we already have that they would be able to build upon. These are open spaces that would be in the yellow. Red would be the UCSB slash, you know, active golf spaces like Sandpiper. Purple is the active recreation like Edgewood Park and Gersh Park, and then of course green is our open park space, our park spaces. Here's an example of analysis and assessment output of the walk times and distances to different facilities. So, you know, categorized on location, what the facility is, and then how long it would take someone to walk from or to get to that location and what that might look like. That'll help us to really plan our projects to have the most impact. Here's another analysis and assessment. Just an example down in the South Coast, south of LA. Following the analysis and assessment, they would come up with a list of proposed projects and improvements. Those can be, you know, existing path that we have and repairs, new paths that we may need in certain areas, whether those be, you know, new class one facilities that we haven't identified yet, other class two facilities, other support facilities or needed improvements to facilitate cyclists. You know, it's not just about being or pedestrians just walking on the paths or in the areas. They got to have the facilities to store their bikes or locker facilities to change. We come up with typical sections to make it easier going forward with the design and roadway improvements. Of course, lighting for safety, signage for wayfinding so that not just the residents but visitors visiting the area, walking and biking, have clear signage and wayfinding points that would match the regional area as well, have maybe a city of Goleta flair to them, but will clearly communicate the path of travel and how to get to and from important points of interest. And of course, intersection controls. Those are big barriers to particularly pedestrian travel. When you have intersections that don't have good controls, pedestrians aren't comfortable necessarily walking because they can't get through that barrier. And so coming up with ways, identifying those intersections, coming up with maybe better controls that we can implement and facilitate a better crossing. Time frame. We're looking at kicking the project off in May. Again, we're final negotiation, want to take the contract to council for authorization. They would do the history and analysis data through kind of, you know, the June time frame, outreach again continuing through the most of the project June through December. It would be an ongoing event. The analysis and assessment that June, July through September time frame, and then culminating with the proposed projects and improvement list, as well as the master plan, the final document that we're looking to get from this in the spring of 2017. So it's a good, you know, 12, 18-month process that we're looking at to be a successful and have a good master plan that we can point to for our projects. Coordination, of course, we're not going to do this alone. There's no way. We've already been working with the County of Santa Barbara, UCSB, Chamber of Commerce, Coast, SB Bike, City of Santa Barbara, and MTD, among others. Part of this is coming to the commission, such as the Parks and Rec Commission, yourselves, to keep you up to speed and get your input and direction. I would like to say, and a big thanks to some of these groups, they did offer in-kind services. So part of the success of our grant landing it is dollar amounts that are in-kind. So when SB Bike or Coast is coming to our outreach events and helping us to interact with the public, we'll be documenting those hours, and they'll be part of our grant reimbursement program and submittal process, because that those in-kind hours are were important in landing the grant. So they're a part of the team in more ways than one. Opportunities, you know, why do we need a master plan? We have one, right? The big opportunity for us is a comprehensive plan that has been updated to current trends and current standards. There's been a lot of design standards in the recent years that affect projects. So having a current master plan that we can point to helps us with grant opportunities going forward. We're able to say it is in our master plan, and that leads credence to that grant and gives credit. We get more points in the process. Other future projects we can point to, and they can piggyback into that as well. And then, of course, long-term data tracking. Part of the process would be not just the master plan, but setting up the tools so that we can track long-term data. Where are the trends? Do we need in the next round to go and to move, you know, to a different area in terms of improvements? Again, grants, when we're going after other projects, we can point to that data and statistics in the grant application. Those are really important. So that long-term data tracking is crucial for us as well. And that's something that we're lacking right now currently. Just a brief overview. In the last couple of years, you know, we've had some pretty good success with landing some grants. Our active transportation program, you'll hear about the Hollister Class 1 bike path from my colleague Teresa here shortly. Equifoller, $2 million project for bike and pet improvements on that project. Old Town Goleta sidewalk infill, a $2.224 million grant through ATP this last round. That'll be a comprehensive sidewalk infill project in Old Town. We landed the only Tiger grant on the South Coast ever in the Hollister Class 1, the Hollister Corridor Study. It's a planning grant, and we're pretty proud of that. Highway Safety Improvement Program, we've landed various grants, and we're continuing to apply for all those in the future as they come up and as they fit into the projects currently in our workload. And we do have Measure A pending applications, although I think we received notification that the initial round we've landed five, I think, but those have to go to TTAC and then SBCAG for approval. But I think we've landed two or three in each category of Safe Routes to School and the bike pedestrian projects, which is pretty cool. I'm going to skip that because Teresa's going to talk about this one. Equifoller, if you're not familiar with that project, that's one that's along the Equifoller and Fowler roads in southern Old Town. Just some examples of the ones I just mentioned. Old Town Sidewalk, everything north of Hollister, as well as the section of Pine Avenue south of Hollister is the project area for that one.
James, would you mind if you could scroll back to the Equifoller project and just indicate, here's a laser pointer,
yeah.
Kellogg Avenue and then Fairview and then the connectors.
Absolutely, and please, like Vito, Dr. Adamas jumped in. If you have any questions for some of these, I am taking liberties with assumptions that you may know some of these projects already, so I apologize. Okay. So thank you. This is State Route 217, of course, Hollister Avenue. This is Kellogg, and then, of course, Equal and Fowler Road extensions, and then this is Fairview. So this would be kind of where the bike ped improvements to that project that we added on to would be. So thank you.
And just to share with the commission, these two roadways are very important for Old Town because right now, as you're aware, the primary east-west thoroughfare is Hollister Avenue, and Equal and Fowler would relieve some of the pressure on Hollister Avenue with these two roadways, Equal and Fowler. So they're really important projects, not only for Old Town, but for the city as a whole. As you know, there's many vehicles that go through Hollister Avenue through Old Town every day, so it would really greatly improve circulation through Old Town. And it's something that I know a number of residents and businesses have asked about, and it would be great to see these things finally built and operational.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yep.
Old Town Sidewalk, again, if you have any questions.
That one has me befuddled. What okay. is infill?
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Infill. Sidewalk infill is where there is sections of sidewalk that are missing. So Old Town is you know, of course, we inherited all of it from the county. Old Town is one of the areas that the sidewalk there is not necessarily 4 feet wide, not even 6 feet wide, which are standard. There's parts that dead end at telephone poles or hedges. There's sections where you have a sidewalk and then it's just grass in the neighboring adjacent parcel. So infill is basically putting sidewalk everywhere. And the goal of that is a network plan so that throughout all of Old Town, there'd be sidewalk on at least one side of every street throughout all of Old Town. So you know, we have pictures of families walking with their strollers, pushing their strollers down the middle of the street with cars trying to go around them. You know, the rain events, you know, it's a situation that we can certainly improve the safety for the residents of Old Town.
And just to dovetail into Mr. Winslow's comments, the sidewalk infill not only helps enhance pedestrian and vehicular safety, but also once completed, it improves drainage and also parking in that area. Because when you try to park in an area where there aren't sidewalks, it's hard to figure out where you can park and where you're not. So it's a good opportunity to really enhance and improve things in Old Town. And it's a really important project again, too.
Yeah, we're pleased to have landed that one.
I have a question. And sure. I'm not sure if this list of projects was meant to be comprehensive, but there are a couple that I don't see on here, and I was wondering.
Sure, let me.
I'll just mention what they are. Is the Ward Memorial Class 2 bike lane, and the other one was the San Jose Creek extension that would go underneath the freeway.
I have a few of those slides in here, we talk about the end. And do you have any, Teresa, for those? Okay, then I'll bring them up. The Hollister Corridor Study that I mentioned, the Tiger Grant, of course, that's a planning grant to look at what our options are for additionally not just Equal Fowler, but also solving some of the traffic congestion along Hollister. That's an important street in our community. It's important, as Director Adamaya said, the businesses are really interested in that, and that's something that we're moving forward with in terms of identifying what our options are for Hollister in particular, mm-hmm. moving forward. It's a complete street concept, planning study. We talked about some of the future grants that are similar, some of the other grant projects that we've looked at is a class one bike path on Cathedral Oaks. So extending from basically South Glen Annie Road to just past of La Patera Drive, you know, towards Fairview. That's a class one facility that we're proposing putting in. We're going after funding for that one. The 101 overcrossing is a vehicular and pedestrian and bicycle overcrossing that has been on the books for a while that we're looking at additional funding grant opportunities to solve.
Where is that?
This is in Western Goleta. This is, of course, the 101. We have Hollister Avenue, and then the overcrossing, one of the options is here. Cathedral Oaks is over here, and Stork Road is over here. Excuse me. Yes?
This may be a silly question, but if funding presents itself, literally what does that mean? It would be a bridge? It would be...
A bridge.
It would be a bridge.
Yeah, so we have Measure A funding set aside in the outer years. We may potentially have some other funding as well. We're looking at trying to fund the design component, the environmental. We have a lot of right-of-way with this one, so we're looking at opportunities to enhance that funding source and move forward.
And this is an automobile bridge,
right? It is all three. It is a vehicular, bicycle, and pedestrian. Yeah, overcrossing. And that's a significant one for not just bike and ped, but also MTD, you know, getting buses into the community, as well as fire and police and ambulance. We have very limited access. I mean, Stork Road and Cathedral Oaks are the two overcrossings in that area. We have nothing else. And as you know, this is a huge residential population, as is a little bit down here, but we have a UCSB. We have a ton of faculty, staff, and students that live over in this community that traverse, need to get over to UCSB, as well as the other commercial business district, whether that be Marketplace or Cabrillo Business Park or the other business parks in that area. Mm. There's also, of course, the shopping. So there's a lot of enhancements to residential or to life in terms of jobs, safety, as well, and shopping opportunities. So that's an important project for us that we're really chomping to try to get some funding for. Of course, La Patera Sidewalk, this is over by the bus depot. We're proposing some sidewalks Again, infill, there's missing sidewalk in this section. And the buses stop on Hollister Avenue, and people trying to get to the train depot need to walk down the sidewalk and they get kicked out on the street. So, you know, logically, it would make sense to add sidewalk in those areas to make that travel safer. Recently completed the Patterson Avenue sidewalk, again, infill project. Cathedral Oak, Santa Margarita intersection improvements. That was the rectangular rapid flashing beacon project that my colleague, Ms. Lopes, was the project manager for both of those. Still Canyon sidewalk, we just completed that. That's over kind of between Windsor and, Santa Margarita area, south of the orchard that was there. There was no sidewalk, and so we did an infill project in that location. And then Los Canarios Bridge overhead, which again was Ms. Lopes' project. To answer some of your questions, Chair Richards, projects in design and construction we're moving forward with is in 2016, Marie Ignacio Bike Path. That's a lighting project, and that's continuing the county's basically added solar lights, LED lights on either side of the city boundary, and we're just basically adding the section that's missing. The crosswalk improvements at the community center, we're adding a HAWC, which is a high-intensity activated flashing beacon at that location that will, currently there's flashing yellow, if you're familiar with the crosswalk there. We're moving it to the east about 100 feet, so that's between the two bus stop locations, and we're adding a traffic signal style arm that will turn red, so it'll flash yellow, but then it'll be red when a pedestrian's crossing the road. So we're hoping that'll really improve safety for that area of the community. In tandem with that, once that goes in, we have the flashing beacons down at the orange intersection that we are proposing putting on in rapid flashing beacons, and those would also be on a mast arm. And those are the rapid flash with a non-standard pattern. And those two projects will significantly improve, I think, the safety of pedestrians crossing Hollister Avenue in Old Town. Of course, the Class 1 bike path on Hollister. We have a pedestrian path lighting project at the community center. That's on the west side. If you're familiar, there's a path there that goes from Hollister back to the Boys and Girls Club. There's fence along the entire section. We're proposing to remove the fence on the front and back. That'll really improve safety. Right now, there's a corridor where once you get in, you can't get out. And so we're removing fence, replacing some of the asphalt. There's a lot of damage to the path, and adding lighting. Questions? Ooh, I don't have those slides. To answer your question, Ward Drive, we have working on the design for that one. That's a Class 2 bike lane, and that is in preliminary design, and we're working with on a contract for final design for that one. And then your other one question, remind me, Chair?
The San Jose Creek.
Do you want me to leave that one for you? Would you like? Okay, I would like to leave that one for my colleague, Ms. Lopes.
Okay, the hot potato one.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, my question is regarding on Calle Real where Maravilla is located. I know that there's been a group of seniors who have really advocated for better ways in which to safely go from side to side. Many of them walk from Maravilla down to the grocery store to CVS. And I actually attended one of those meetings, and I know they've continued. That wasn't, obviously, it's not a part of a bicycle plan, but do you know anything about that at all?
Yes, we do. We have a new traffic engineer on board, and we've went out and looked at that. We did submit a Measure A application, and I think that's one of the ones we landed for improvements there. In addition, we're also putting in a HAWC. We got a Highway Safety Improvement Program grant for another HAWC signal on Calle Real at Kingston. That's a flashing beacon location as well, that's old and outdated, and so that will be a HAWC there. And then we also have a rapid flashing beacon on Hollister at Chapel that we have the HISIP grant for. But I know we have evaluated Calle Real, and we are working on a budget. We have a budget for that in the book, and working on grant opportunities and funding sources for that project. Yes, thank you. Good question.
And Mr. Chair and Commissioner West, excuse me, also to add on to Mr. Winslow's comments, on the public safety side, we've worked with the Sheriff's Motor Traffic Safety Unit to conduct pedestrian stings there on Calle Real, and that is to enhance people using the crosswalk there at Kingston. And you may see more of that in the coming months because we've been very active. We just had one there a couple weeks ago. So it's to enhance traffic safety and awareness that when people see someone in the crosswalk area, to ensure that they properly stop and make it safety. Because we've gotten some of the feedback from some of the folks that said, hey, we want to make sure that, you know, it's as safe as possible for people crossing Calle Real, which gets pretty busy at times.
There was one woman I met who's in a wheelchair, and she lives in Maravilla, and she was just saying she takes her life in her hands trying to get herself to CVS. So I was, you know, my heart really went out for her because there were very few places that she could go from one side of Calle Real to the other, you know, and then being in the wheelchair, it was quite difficult for her. So this is very good news, and I thank you.
Absolutely.
You can tell me if this needs to wait until Ms. Lopes does her presentation, but we had a very large needs assessment document. I don't know if you've had the opportunity to review that.
Yeah, we participated in that.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was just wondering that I know that you've got a very full plate, obviously, here with all of that stuff, but if there are opportunities, are you looking for them to make some of the linkages between the parks resources that it came up in one of the workshops that I attended, and I was just wondering if that was kind of top of head.
Yeah, in terms of linkages, you mean bike and pedestrian connections. Commissioner Hart, part of the analysis and assessment, one of the figures I showed you was that walking time, and that's one of the outcomes we would get is all of our park facilities or any of those locations that have been identified in the needs assessment, we'd be able to, the consultant will pull together a basically a heat map of how long it really takes to get, you know, here's your 5-minute circle, here's your 10-minute circle, here's your 15-minute circle. And if there's barriers that can be removed or gaps in that network that would improve that, you know, that walking or biking time, and that was a walking one predominantly, then those would be projects that would go into the queue, I would think. And so that's something that will come out of the analysis phase.
Is this may be getting too much into the nitty-gritty, but in terms of priorities, though, I imagine that people movement and traffic flow and those take priority over those kinds of concerns? Or how do you try to work through those kinds of multiple needs, if you will?
Yeah, you know, it's a tough thing. Of course, safety trumps everything. You know, code trumps everything. Beyond that, it's a balance of, you know, what the list of projects are, what's the priority for council, you know, and ultimately that's where it comes down. You know, we do the assessment, we bring things to council. We'll have I think about 10 projects probably at least from this master plan. And, you know, how those projects get funded and the resources put behind it really comes down to council's action. You know, we have our staff recommendations. But beyond safety and code requirements, it's kind of a decision at that level. So it's fun to watch, though.
Are there specific goals or outcomes from the Bicycle Master Plan? Like, you know, we expect that the percentage of commuters will, you know, bicycle or alternative, you know, forms will increase, or people will walk, you know, X percentage more or something like that. Are there any kind of metrics in that as part of the goals of it?
Thank you, Chair Richards. That's a great question. We would hope that people would increase biking and walking, yes. In terms of the specific goals, though, we haven't identified that as a specific measurable goal. But it is included in that data tracking that we talked about. So that is where less of a goal and more of a program in place that we would be able to use to track that. So we'd be able to show increases in those areas if they occur, when they occur, hopefully, right? But the real goals of the master plan is a comprehensive document and something that we can point to and use for funding opportunities. An outcome, I would say, would be increases in walking and biking. And the steps that we put in place will help us to track that. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. But we would always certainly hope that people increase their walking and biking.
It seems like you're hoping to put the mechanisms in place that will allow that to happen, but
yes.
That's not necessarily a specific goal.
Correct, and then attempt to track them so that we know if they're successful or not.
I would imagine that it's driven by the funding bodies out there. Yeah. Is that correct?
It is, Vice Chair Hart. The grants that we go after, they're all different. They all have their different requirements. But the bigger ones, the ATP, the HACCP, they're focused on metrics. They're focused on numbers. So, what is the benefit to this project in reducing collisions and fatalities at this intersection? What is the predictive increase in your bike and ped walking? So we need those numbers to make our grants more successful or more competitive. And the implementing or the outcome of this grant would be that data tracking analysis where we can say, okay, in this area, here's our numbers. And if we put this in place, we can show that our numbers would increase by X percentage. And then that really would help our grant opportunities. And we've seen that in some of our grants. In the comments back on particularly La Patera Sidewalk, the one of the key factors in that not being as successful or not getting that grant was we didn't have good predictive numbers on the usage. And so we need those. We need to be able to show if we build this, will they come, type of thing.
Other questions? Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate your
thank
presentation.
Thank you so much
for
your time.
Very thorough.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the Commission, our next presentation will be conducted by Ms. Teresa Lopes, our Senior Project Manager with the Department of Public Works. It will be on the Hollister Avenue Class 1 bike path and multi-use path, and really just kind of share with you a project overview and some really good information there that I'm sure you're going to want to have some good questions on. So with that, we'll have Ms. Lopes get started.
Mm-hmm. That's from an IT person.
Yeah.
While we figure out the technical difficulties here, good evening, Mr. Chair.
If you can get your microphone.
Commission.
Okay. I guess I'll touch on some of the questions that came up during Mr. Winslow's presentation regarding the San Jose Creek bike path. And as you may know, that project is basically split into two segments. There's a segment that we call the Middle Extent Project, which is from Calle Real to Hollister that runs along San Jose Creek, and then there's the Southern Extent, which goes from Hollister to Goleta Beach area, the Oberon Trail connection. For the Middle Extent, we've kind of split that into two segments where we have the northern segment, which is from Calle Real to Armitos, and then we have a southern segment from Armitos to Hollister. And a quick update on those is the Armitos to Hollister segment is we're currently in design for that project. Actually, we're at about 90% design, and we plan on that going to construction in tandem with the Old Town Kellogg Park. So we're waiting on the park to go forward so that the path will be constructed at the same time. And the portion from Calle Real to Armitos, we are currently in preliminary design. We're almost complete with the environmental document, and we are coordinating with Caltrans since we're going under the 101. They've already looked at some preliminary plans and have agreed to what we're proposing in concept, and same with the Union Pacific Railroad. We're going underneath there, so they've seen some preliminary plans, so we're going to continue to work with them as well.
Okay, great.
And then the southern extent, we are in a preliminary design with that. We're doing some, putting together some planning documents, and we've been working with Caltrans. They have a project to replace the 217 bridge over San Jose Creek. And that's going to go to construction, I think, in around 2021. And where we're proposing to put the Class 1 bike path is down 217 for a portion and crossing that bridge. So we've been working with Caltrans to get a bridge wide enough to accommodate our Class 1 bike path.
Great.
And if I could interject to a question related to that, with the Old Town Park, I know that there was a concern that had come up before that it looked like, you know, there would be some traffic bicycle path that might go through the park, but we wanted to make sure that there was a connection that you could get from Kellogg going through the park and connecting to the bike path. Will
yes.
that be possible?
Yes, there is. So we plan on connecting to Hollister as well as a path going through to connect to Kellogg.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, so the Hollister Avenue Class 1 bike path. And this project is located on Hollister Avenue along the southern side of Hollister from Pacific Oaks to Elwood School. Oops. So the project description is we are proposing to construct a 14-foot wide Class 1 / multi-use path along the south side of Hollister, and that 14 feet includes a 10-foot two-direction Class 1 bike path as well as a 4-foot pedestrian walkway adjacent to that. We are also adding a 3 to 5 foot landscape buffer area between the multi-use path and the traffic lanes on Hollister. And the project will maintain the existing Class 2 bike lanes that are currently there on both sides of Hollister. In order to gain the width we need to construct the 14-foot wide path and the 5-foot landscape buffer, we will be reducing the width of the existing lanes on Hollister to 11 feet, the existing, they're around 13. And so it's kind of shifting Hollister more towards the north, giving us more width to build the path on the south side. Along with reducing the traffic lanes, it would involve reconstructing the medians, narrowing those up a bit, and then the project will include the installation of a new traffic signal at Cannon Green, and then a signal interconnect between Cannon Green and the entrance road signal. So the purpose of the project is it's primarily a Safe Routes to School project, and it's to provide a separated pathway to get kids from the neighborhoods on the south side of Hollister to Elwood School. But in addition, it provides a Class 1 bike facility for all users along Hollister, and it will connect the neighborhoods to the retail centers, restaurants, and recreational opportunities east of Pacific Oaks. The project also provides a connection to existing and future bike lanes and bike paths and trails, such as along the Elwood Bluffs, and then also to the new trails that will be planned as part of the UCSB North Campus project. And it will also complete an important segment in GLETA's active transportation network. So we were awarded a Measure A transportation grant for preliminary design of the project in 2012. In September 2014, We were successful in getting a $1.64 million active transportation grant for construction of the project. We are in the final stages of design, which design will be complete late this spring, and we anticipate going into construction late summer of this year. During the design process and the preliminary design process, we held two open houses at the Elwood Elementary School, one in August of 2014, another in October. And we had a great turnout, over 70 attendees. We've also had individual design meetings with MTD and Santa Barbara Bike Coalition. And we've presented the project at the general meeting for COAST in December of 2014 and also had a presentation to City Council in February of 2015. And now I described some of the changes to the lane widths and the bike path widths. So this is a typical section showing that we're going to have maintained 5-foot class 2 bike lanes on each side of Hollister, and that we are reducing the traffic lane width to 11 feet. We'll have left turn lanes in some areas would be 10 feet, ranging between 10 to 12 feet. And then we'll have our 3 to 5 foot landscape buffer. The 4-foot pedestrian pathway, as you can see, would be adjacent to that landscape buffer, and then the 10-foot class 1 bike facility. And that bike rider on that picture is very happy with the new bike path. Yeah.
Dangerously happy.
So this picture is kind of a mock-up to show what that path would look like. The photo on the left is the existing looking down Hollister towards the east, towards Pacific Nice. Oaks. And then the picture on the right is an estimate of what it's going to look like with that wider path in there and the landscape buffer. And this shows cars. The existing condition, as you may be aware, along Hollister on the south side, there's several street intersections. And so one of the concerns with this project is how are we going to handle the crossings at the street intersections? So at the non-signalized intersections, one of the main concerns is that we make the crossing of this path very obvious to motorists, and using pavement marking and signing to make motorists aware that this isn't just a one-way bike path. They're going to be looking for bicycles traveling in both directions as well as pedestrians crossing at this area. So we'll have special signing, which I have some examples of I can show a little bit later, and then also special pavement marking where the trail comes across the street intersections. And we plan on having stop signs on the path at the stop-controlled intersections. And there again, you can see the proposed lane widths. So this is just an example of some pavement marking treatments that we can use to really bring this crossing to the attention of the motorists who may be making turns into or out of those minor streets, using a combination of the white dashed lines, the ladder type crosswalks that you typically see, using special bike symbols, and then perhaps the green lane striping. The elephant tracking?
Yes.
Oh, that's those fat square dashes.
Next to the lime?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I just wanted to say I've seen some of that in Goleta recently, and it looks fabulous. It's very eye-catching, very noticeable. You can't miss it. I think it's great. It's really wonderful.
Yes, thank you for that comment. Goleta has been one of the more forward-thinking agencies in this area using the green lane mm-hmm. bike lanes. And our goal in using the green paint is to use it in areas where you have cars and bikes crossing to really bring attention to that. And then here's another example. The fancy picture up there at the top is actually a product that it's kind of a thermoplastic that you can actually put down. Yeah, a company called Enos Flint has that product, and they have different patterns and colors.
It's probably irrelevant to this conversation, but how long do the markings last before you have to repaint or re...
Actually, the material, if you do something like that fancy one, it's a long-lasting material, so it lasts longer than a typical stripe.
Oh, wow.
So it's kind of a thermoplastic, but it's very skid resistant. Yeah, so it lasts a while. It is expensive, I will say that. And then some of the signing that will be used is signing to indicate where the bikes will be located and the pedestrians, and again the turning vehicles to yield to bikes or pedestrians, which are in the crossing area. And we really want to make sure that particularly vehicles turning right off of Hollister, make sure that they are looking both ways before they make that movement. And then here's an example of some pictures which show other installations of where you have the Class 1 bike path and in a pedestrian area. We would really like to use different colors to really show the separation. So we're researching the cost of that because that's expensive as well. And so we're going to see what we can do with that. But minimally, we will have striping and pavement markings to indicate that. And then I just wanted to mention that this project has been rather interesting because from when we started a couple years ago to where we are now, the state and agencies have been coming out with new design standards and updating their standards. Caltrans has just come out in December of this year with a design bulletin which addresses the separated bikeways, which are similar to what we're proposing here with our project. And then they also adopted a FHWA guide, which addresses the separated bike lane planning and design guide, which shows some of these different types of installations that you're starting to see, and, of course, the NACTO, Urban Bikeway Design Guide. And I wanted to point out a similar project, which is currently in preliminary design. The city of Santa Barbara is doing a separated facility similar to ours at Las Positas Modoc Road multi-use pathway. Mm-hmm. And with that, I'll turn it over to questions.
Thank you. Yes, Ms. Jones.
Thank you. I have a question just from logistics and design. I'm curious what's the benefit to have or retain the Class 2 bike lane
That's right against the travel lane when you have a nice separated new class one lane with the landscape buffer. I'm just curious how that works, or maybe somebody who actively bikes can explain, especially if you're needing the space. I'm just curious why you would retain that on the one side that has the new path.
That's a very good question. When we spoke with the Bicycle Coalition and the bicycling community, we realized that there's two types of users. There's the road warrior spandex bikers who like to travel quite fast, and they don't want to stop or be interrupted. And because this project was primarily a safe routes to school project first, and knowing that we would have kids and families, you know, riding more leisurely along the path, that it was important to keep the faster bicyclists, give them their area.
That makes sense. Thank you.
I'm not sure. I'm asking a different question, but is the 5 feet, is that some, for the landscape avenue, is that some standard that has to be maintained? Given the compression of the traffic lanes, I would think that could be shrunk, but is that a standard?
The buffer, yeah. With the Class 1 bike path, it's standard that you have a 5-foot buffer. We ran into some issues where we needed to make sure we provided enough width on Hollister for vehicles to make U-turns. And there's several areas where that's a pretty heavy movement, because if you're going westbound, the only way you can get eastbound to something is you make a U-turn. So in those areas, we are shrinking that buffer to 3 feet, and we maintain the separation we need between the Class 1 facility and the road by having the pedestrian pathway adjacent to the roadside.
I have a question about the landscaping. I mean,
yes.
It might be kind of out of our purview, mm-hmm. but I am interested in, you know, what's going to be happening in that landscape, that 5-foot buffer, and I assume that you're going to be looking at drought-tolerant plantings, and wondered if it was also going to have trees, or is it all just going to be like grasses and shrubs?
It's going to mostly be lower shrubs in order to maintain sight distance, since we have several driveways and then those minor streets. So we have to make sure. We wanted to put some trees in that area, but we found out that there's very few areas where we could actually put a tree where it wouldn't block sight distance for the cars or the people along the trail. So we will have the trees at the back of the sidewalk area. There's some there now, and then we're going to replace some in areas where the trees have died, or there's opportunity to put some more. Mm-hmm. But the buffer area, we need to keep it at a lower level. Mm-hmm. And also, we will be using reclaimed water for the irrigation along there as well.
Great, thank you. Other questions?
Yeah, I just want a clarification. So is the proposed landscaping going to be drought tolerant or native, or do you have an idea what the palette will be?
You know, actually, we do have Wallace Group is doing our landscape design, and they have presented us with some concepts, which I apologize, I did not bring with me, but it would be similar to what you see on the, if you're familiar with the Los Caneros and Calle Real roundabout, they did the landscape design
nice.
In that area, and so we wanted to do something similar through this.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate your presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you again for Mr. Winslow and Ms. Lopes for the presentation tonight. I know that the commission enjoyed a lot of the material that was presented, and you'll see more of this throughout the year ahead as we continue to provide updates to the commission.
All right, moving along, we're on item B, our consent calendar, and it looks like we have one item, which will be the approval of the minutes from November 18th.
I move that we accept the minutes.
A second.
As presented.
Okay.
A second.
And we have a second. Okay. Any discussion, objections, any changes? Okay. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay. All right. Minutes are approved. And it looks like we just have one discussion slash action item, which would be the selection of the new chair and vice chair for this year. And I guess I'll open it up to nominations.
I'd like to nominate Commissioner Hart for the chair.
I second it.
Okay, Commissioner Hart, do you accept the nomination?
I do.
Okay. Now, I guess, do we vote each time?
Other nominations.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
All right. Are there other nominations for chair? Okay. Seeing none, let's see. Do we have...
I'll make a motion.
Oh, we already have a motion.
Is it a motion or just was it a nomination?
Mm-hmm. A motion.
Okay, I make a motion to move that Commissioner Hart becomes chair of the commission.
Okay, how about a consensus?
Between a second.
That's fine.
Okay. A second.
Okay. Okay. A second. Okay. All right, all in favor of selecting Commissioner Hart as the new chair?
Aye.
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 Do I vote?
Yes. I think you get a vote.
Aye.
Okay. It's unanimous. All right. Is this where we hand the gavel off?
Vice chair.
And then the vice chair.
Oh. Okay.
Continue on with vice chair.
All right. I'm doing such a good job here. All right. Do we have a nomination for a vice chair for the 2016 year?
I would like to ask if you would like to be vice. If y'all want to swap. Or maybe not.
I'd be willing to it. I would be willing to consider it, yes.
I want to nominate Chair West, actually, as vice chair.
Commissioner West?
I'm sorry, Commissioner West. I don't know why I said that. Commissioner West.
Okay.
So that's another nomination.
Would you be willing to accept that?
Oh, sure, I'd be happy to, but I don't know how to do this at this point.
Okay, so we have two nominations. Anybody else would like to nominate somebody? Discussion? I'm willing to. I know we've had a...
good year.
Well, we've had a good year, that's true. And we've also had a tradition of rotating, so I'm aware of that as well. So I could go either way. I'm happy to continue, and I'm happy to step aside. So, do you have any strong feelings?
I'm very committed to this group, and I just want to do what's best for everyone and everyone to have a good year. So I'm happy either way.
Should I make a motion? I'd like to make a motion that Commissioner West be appointed to the vice chair position.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. All right. All in favor of selecting Commissioner West as the vice chair?
Aye.
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 Okay. Do you have a vote?
I okay. guess.
it's unanimous.
Thank you.
All right. Congratulations, Chair Hart and Vice Chair West. And... I will hand it off to you.
And we can do the...
Switch?
We'll do the rotation of chairs, I guess, at this point.
Well, our name tags are still there.
We'll
so.
Have to...
I think we should...
We'll have to...
He's not moving.
Sitting here.
Yeah. All right, I guess.
I don't know. All right.
Our clerk, Ms. Gregory, is assisting with the rotation.
May I stay here, or do I?
I think so.
I actually miss sitting down there.
Well,
we've all had our little spots all these years. Yes,
I know.
Does this red button launch missiles? No, I'm just kidding.
No.
All right. Moving on. All right, director's report.
Mr. Chair and members of the commission, just a few items tonight for you. First off, we've had Commissioner Richard Rojas resign from the commission, and we just wanted to take an opportunity to thank him for his insight and guidance and wisdom on so many things related to the establishment of the Parks and Recreation Commission, as well as his diligent participation in many of the community meetings that we had, the formulation and preparation of the recreation needs assessment, and really a lot of important milestones in the commission's history. And I know from a staff's standpoint, we just wanted to reach out via this forum to just thank him for all of that dedicated service and wish he and his family well, I think, as they're relocating to be closer to family. So I know some of you may have similar comments, but I know I will miss him. He has also extended a willingness to continue being a resource, which if he's listening tonight, I'm quoting you, Mr. Rojas, but we'll definitely be continuing to be in touch with him and really appreciate his service to the commission. So I'll turn it over to any of you who would like to say some nice things.
I couldn't have said it better myself, but I also want to recognize that he was the first chair of this commission
he
for the
was.
City of Goleta, which was really epitomizes his, again, mentorship, knowledge, guidance.
Absolutely.
So thank you.
Yeah, and if I may, I just want to say I sent him a note, but I will personally miss him. He was a great resource for the commission and had a lot of good feedback and opinions to offer, and I know we will miss him. Thank you, Richard.
I agree. Commissioner Rojas was a very important asset early in this commission. He was a founding member and critical as the first chair. I think that he also brought a unique perspective, one that was very experienced in the ways of government and particularly in the area of Parks and Rec. So it was really helpful, and he will very much be missed.
I just wanted to say that I sent him a little note, and I agree with what everyone has already said, but personally, his note touched me in the respect that he's at a point in his life where he and his wife want to be closer to their children and their grandchildren, and I certainly can understand that and wish them both great happiness in their future.
We also, as the commission is aware, Ms. Luz Reyes-Martin accepted a position with Santa Barbara City College as the interim public information officer. As the commission is aware, Ms. Reyes-Martin was really a huge resource to us, was secretary to the commission, fielded many of the questions and emails and follow-up on requests that the commission had, and we're really proud of her. I'm really proud of her. And she will be missed. I know she continues to be around. She lives locally. But also wanted to just extend my appreciation for the great work effort that she gave to the commission. And I know many of you appreciated her support throughout this time. So we also wish her well, and we're really proud of her and miss her, and really wanted to just thank her. And I don't know if anybody else had any comments for Ms. Reyes-Martin.
Oh, I just wanted to say I've already seen her on TV on behalf of City College. And, of course, she was eloquent and just wonderful. And I know I personally will miss her so much, because through the years we've had wonderful conversations. And I've sat next to her when she and her husband, we were CERT volunteers, and they were great. So I wish her all the best. And City College is very lucky to have her on staff now.
Hear, hear.
Yeah, I just want to add that I got the privilege this last year as vice chair to have even more detailed discussions with her. And, you know, just her intelligence, her awareness of all the things that are going on, as well as the politics of this, she was just very professional and eloquent in handling all of that. And like I said, I just got even a greater appreciation for her over the last year.
So with the vacancy of Commissioner Rojas and also the student representative, Commissioner Sinskol, staff will be working closely with the clerk's office in moving forward with the process to find the replacements for the commissioners. As the commission is aware, we will have a busy year this year coming up, so it'll be important to have those representatives on board and on the commission as we you know, move forward and march on with the rest of the year. So we'll provide updates on where that process is. The clerk is already aware, and we'll be embarking here shortly. Staff looks forward to the pre-agenda meetings with the chair and vice chair for upcoming meetings, so we'll be in contact with you to conduct scheduling meetings. And part of the purpose of that, as Chair Hart already knows, is it's a great opportunity to look at upcoming agendas for the commission, to review potential discussion items, to calendar them, and also scheduling on the agenda. So it makes for an organized calendar for the year, and we look forward to having those meetings here shortly. Our next meeting of the commission will be March 30th. And while that seems a long ways away, it's really not. And so, as I mentioned, we'll be setting up the pre-agenda meetings. As the commission is also aware, we had a number of items, and we have a document that is now in the implementation phase, which is the recreation needs assessment. And as you heard from tonight from our partners and staff in the Public Works Department, there is a lot of connection with other departments at the city for the implementation of that important document. So as we contemplate additional meetings throughout this year, we will have additional items necessitating input and guidance from the commission as we continue in the evolution and the implementation of that important document. Also, by the time we have our next meeting in late March, at the end of March, just a quick note, staff will be working with the council for the preparation for this year's Deltopia event, which is scheduled for the first or second week of April. We wish we knew for certain. So already we're underway. We'll be well underway. We will be pretty much ready by that time when we come back with this commission on that item. And we will also have a number of updates that some of you have inquired about the Hollister-Kellogg Park, the Civic Center, and a number of other projects that you've expressed an interest in. I also just wanted to share just a general information item about projects. The City Council in January on the 19th took action to approve moving forward with a memorandum of understanding and an operating easement for the Santa Barbara County Fire Department in the development of Fire Station 10 on the western end of Goleta. Important in that new building will be a community room that will be a great opportunity to conduct outreach and community meetings on the western end of Goleta. This item is, this important project is in collaboration with the Santa Barbara County Fire Department and Chief Eric Peterson and his excellent staff. It's been a wonderful collaboration. We are now at the point with Chief Peterson of this item going to the County Board of Supervisors for consideration in mid-March. And so hopefully when that item goes to the board for consideration, we will be able to move forward with their approval. And then we will begin, as some of you are familiar with the construction and development process, the whole permitting design process. And so it's an important effort, and I wanted to share that with the commission because there is a component that relates to the community outreach and having an opportunity to engage the public and members of the community on the western end of Goleta, as well as enhancing the level of public safety and fire response much needed on the western end of Goleta. So we're pleased to kind of share that with you as a general information item.
Excuse me, whereabouts would that be?
It's at the very end of Hollister Avenue at as you approach the Cathedral Oaks over crossing right there next to the Hideaways development.
Yes.
Right next door. There's actually a sign on the property that says future site of Fire Station 10. So we're really excited about this and working. You know, the city council's been involved, the fire department's involved, the board of supervisors will be involved. We have a design team that we're working with, KBZ Architects out of Santa Barbara, led by Mr. Joe Wilcox. So we have really an excellent group of people to help make an important move forward on making this fire station a reality. That's it for now. I'm sure I'll have many more items to share with you when we return back in March. But as always, if you have any additional questions, feel free to email staff. And as I said, we'll be in contact on the scheduling for the pre-agenda forecast meeting. This concludes my director's report for tonight. And again, thank you for your great support and help on many items. And I think this year is going to be very busy. I know last year we were pretty busy, but I think this year will be equally, if not more, busy than last year. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that report. Do we have any future agenda items besides the next meeting, which is actually just a month away?
We anticipate some additional items related to the recreation needs assessment that we'll be coordinating with the Department of Public Works on to provide updates to the commission and also input on. And we'll be reviewing additional items that are pending in the queue for preparation and delivery to the commission.
There's an issue that I wanted to bring up, and I know this came up when we did our tour of the various parks, but I know one of the concerns that's been expressed is the lack of dog parks in the community. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if we could, you know, maybe, I don't know if that warrants an agenda item. I wanted to keep it on the radar. I read a recent article about Gersh Park, and I believe they no longer allow dog, they had a pilot program that they have stopped now. So there are very few, if any, dog parks in Goleta, and I just wanted to make sure that we have that on our radar.
It's an excellent point, and as the commission is aware, I believe there was some discussion of that in the recreation needs assessment. So it's definitely on our radar, and thank you for bringing that up. We'll have an update item for you very shortly on that.
If there isn't anything further, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Where is it to give when you're in love? I'm happy to do. I'm happy to do.